You're listening to Mentoring Developers, episode number 2.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hey everyone, today we'll be talking to Jay Bobo. Jay is a very nice guy, and I think it will be very good for us to listen to his views, how he got started in software development, and how he's helping others. So, a little bit about him. Jay Bobo is a software engineer and serial entrepreneur. He has 10 plus years of experience in product development and strategy, working with companies such as Microsoft, Nike Pacific, State Farm, and Coca-Cola. He currently works in healthcare, building meaningful products for physicians, pharmacists, and patients alike. And I hear that he's into REST services, and he's into helping new developers succeed. So, looks like this would be a great interview. Without further ado, here's Jay Bobo. So, Jay, how would you describe yourself?
Jay Bobo, I am the father of one, and I am a student. I'm a student of life and student of programming. That's the way I'd put it simply. So pretty much a student.
So you're a student, you're a student of life, you're a student of programming, and what do you do for a living?
Well, I'm an application developer, web application developer. I spend most of my time working with various clients in the healthcare sector, helping them build out APIs. That's my primary job. I'm also heavily involved in recruiting and onboarding and training at my company as well.
Okay, so for somebody who does not know that term, what is an API?
Okay, so an API, I would say, to put it simply, it's a set of instructions. It's a recipe for interacting with the web application. So just to put it simply, everything that I do will go as far as documentation to attempting to create an interface with which, I mean, if you think about it like, almost the instructions to, your car, right? And, hey, how do I go about making it easy for someone to understand how to drive a car and to operate a car? I turn the wheel, I can put both hands on my wheel in order to turn in the car. When I put my foot down on on the pedals, I can brake and I can start. So, everything involving from the documentation to kind of crafting those objects with which a computer or an actual user can manipulate in my case, an application. So that's the most user friendly way I can describe what an API is.
That's a pretty good description. Maybe if I want to elaborate, I can say that it is the inputs and the outputs to a system that perhaps that if you invoke a system in a certain way, this is how the system will respond. So that's...
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. So a lot of people that are going to be listening, they would not have a lot of experience programming software development. And what they want to do is we want to relate to you as when you were a junior developer, when you started out. And how do people get into this? So do you remember your first encounter with programming? How did you How did you discover the world of software development? How did you enter it?
I mean, I think... if I had to really go back and say when I really, really first started, when I had an interest, it started with my interest in computers. And I think that started with, I don't know if anyone remembers Gorillaz. It's an old QBasic game. Yeah. And I remember, I don't even know how I stumbled across it as a kid, and I was thinking, I wonder how this was made, you know? And so I started kind of learning, and, you know, at that time, I think my family had America Online, and I would just, like, read random things on the internet, you know, about how computers were made and about bulletin board systems, and, you know, I learned about war dialers and all types of, you know, wacky and weird stuff that a kid probably shouldn't get his hands on. But from there, obviously, like, you know, a lot of people start, you say, hey, I want to build a website, or in this case, a web page. So you start with basic HTML and basic, you know, CSS a little bit later, you know. And from there, that's kind of how things started. I didn't become much more serious. I didn't really start doing real programming until I got to college and started learning a little bit about Java, and at that time learning about PHP, you know, and other sorts of languages. That's pretty much how I started. That's where, you know, I kind of developed my appreciation for computers and you know, the instructions that made them work and do fun, cool little things.
So when you were a kid, so you're thinking about, hey, how's this game made? So I want to learn how that is made. So you played around with that. And later on in college, you were exposed to it more formally. When did you mean to take programming, or did you just stumble into it in college?
You know, it was actually my intent to get a computer science degree. But like a lot of people, you know, I feel like I wasn't ready for that. I got scared. I was like, oh, I'm going to take a lot of math courses, and I don't know if I have the ability to do this. And so I decided not to. I actually decided not to go through with my computer science degree. And to be honest, you know, I was a kid. I didn't really think it to heart. I didn't take it to heart as much. It was just like a really quick decision. They kind of asked, hey, so what do you want for a degree? And, and when I was in high school, it's like, oh, computers. And then I was like, oh, that sounds really, really hard. Let me find something else to do. But the funny thing about it is I like to, like, do different. I got heavily involved in music while I was in school, and a friend of mine said, hey, you know, I like to throw a party, and he says, I know you know how to DJ, and, you know, you have sound equipment, you know, would you be willing to do this? And I said, yeah, great. And when I said, well, we'll need a website, and we'll need some other sorts of things, and I was like, oh, okay, all right, well, I'm headed back to the computers, I guess. So I had to teach myself again, kind of all over again, how to build a rudimentary website. And at that time, I think we were utilizing Dreamweaver, something like that. And the only place you could get access to Dreamweaver was in the engineering and computer science department. And I was an arts and sciences major, so I had to kind of sneak my way into engineering at night. And I would just kind of pore over Dreamweaver and pore over just various documentation until I felt relatively comfortable, just creating a basic site, you know, with links and, you know, just basic scripts and, you know, so on and so forth. And that's pretty much where I started was in college, and it kind of grew from there, just pretty much self-taught.
Yeah, we find that a lot of software developers in the industry are self-taught. And I think this is a big myth that I find in a lot of high school students, a lot of community college students, other students who are still thinking about their career. And every time I ask them about perhaps choosing software development or software engineering as a career, they always say, well, I don't really have a degree, or computer science scares me, something like that. And it's very difficult for me to communicate to them that you don't actually need a degree. A lot of people that I work with, and they're fantastic developers, they never studied computer science formally. And it doesn't seem to matter in our industry, because there's some skills that you can pick up, and employers don't really think about it as much as people think they do.
Yeah, that's definitely the truth. I think one of the things that's most important, and I see this when, you know, I have the opportunity to interview a lot of the college students that apply to our apprenticeship programs. And one of the things that I look for is passion. And I think that that's the most important thing. And if you have passion, then that's going to lead you to fundamentals down the road anyway. But sometimes fundamentals can get in the way of kind of interrupting your passion. You know, like if a kid has an interest in creating games or websites or web applications, and you just focus on that, then it means that you can get a lot done. But at some point in time, once you start having questions about, hey, I want to optimize this, then that passion will lead you into wanting to learn more about computer science, you know, principles, and you'll also, you know, you'll have an interest in wanting to, maybe you didn't have a big interest in math before, but now you do, because you say, hey, wow, this adds so much value and benefit, you know, to this thing that I'm trying to work on. So I think, you know, it's too bad when you see people who go in and say, well, mom and dad said I should go and get a computer science degree, you know, because I'm going to be able to make some great money. And then they realize that they absolutely hate it. You know, they absolutely hate programming. But if you give me a programmer who loves programming, loves building things, you know, that's a person who that passion will get them through, you know, Comp Sci 101 and, you know, discussing, you know, various, B trees and so on and so forth and various algorithms, you know.
Yeah, I spent way too many years going through college. I studied computer engineering. I studied computer science. I spent almost a decade learning computer science and computer engineering. And I learned so much stuff. I mean, there's computer architecture. There's computer organization. There's a lot of stuff about hardware. There's embedded systems. There's artificial intelligence. There's so much stuff in there. Automata theory. But when I started working, my first job was to build an application, a web application using the .NET framework. I had no idea about the .NET framework. I had never used it. And in academia, you know that people don't like to use Microsoft technologies per se. And in general, they would go with C or C++ or maybe Java, maybe Python, somebody interested, maybe Ruby. But it's almost, let's just say that it's against their principles to teach people real world skills in computer science, especially because they want you to know the underlying concepts, which are very important and relevant. And they don't change. I think that's very valuable. And the algorithms and a lot of deep skills. But in practice, when you go out to work, companies actually, most of the companies don't need those skills. They need some other skills. They need to know, for example, can you work with a version control system like Git? And I never did that in college. I never worked with a revision control system because that's not considered a core skill to have you know, in computer science.
Yeah, which is too bad because Git definitely has, quite the learning curve compared to, you know, other version control systems. So, you know.
That is true.
It's just one of those things.
So how do you keep your skills up to date? Right, we have this constant struggle. Right, every 6 weeks, every two weeks, 2 months, something is changing. How do you keep up to date?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I think the one of the things that's also kind of funny is you have the skills that you need to work on for the workplace, and then there's the skills that you want to have yourself, and those two things can conflict sometimes. So what I've attempted to do is to try to gain an understanding. I tend to have limited time because of the various responsibilities that I have, but I try to do two things. One is to do deep dives on things that I feel like are shared sort of skills that I know would benefit me moving forward, things that would allow me to do my job well, and then also things that I naturally have an interest in. So that might be an example of doing a deep dive using Redis, right? So Redis is an in-memory key value store. It's extremely fast. And there's a lot of amazing things that you can do with it. So that's one thing that I might take a look at. The JavaScript frameworks, there's a new one every other day, right? You got Batman JS, Backbone, and Ember, and React, and Angular, and so on and so forth. As far as those, most of the work that I do tends to be server-side development. But what I'll try to do is to hop into a tutorial. You know, so I did the React tutorial, Facebook's React tutorial not too long ago. So I'll try to do those things just so I'm at least familiar with the concepts and I'm familiar with the overall patterns that they have in place. Because, you know, it's one of those things that you'll see with, like, some new things that there's already, unless they're like, putting out some new pattern out to, you know, the community, that you're more than likely have seen it somewhere else. You know, you say, okay, this is a model view controller sort of pattern, or this is, you know, like a model view, I forget what the other one is, MVVC sort of pattern.
MVVM, the model view, view model.
So you say, okay, I get understanding of maybe how this works, you know, or maybe it's something that looks a bit more functional, a bit more procedural in nature. You know, so once you gain an understanding of that, you have your basic kind of fundamentals down as far as how a lot of these work. You know, in the case of JavaScript frameworks, usually they're attempting to interact with some sort of JSON API. You're like, okay, I think I should be able to, I'm familiar enough with this. You know, for me, I like to at least see everything at least once. I may forget it, but I feel like it makes it easier when I need to pick it up again. But, you know, that's just the nature of the business. The nature of the business isn't so much about, hey, do you have a bunch of skills? But have you developed your core fundamentals? And have you established a really good pattern and practice for learning things quickly? Because, you know, all of a sudden, your boss will come in, we got some new piece of technology, or some client wants to use something that you've never used before. So it's more about, you know, establishing really good problem-solving skills, you know, reading errors, being patient, reading through documentation, and also knowing when to get up and, you know, walk away and take a break and, you know, give yourself a chance to think, you know, to... you know, and come up with some time and, you know, just a new and fresh way of looking at things. Knowing when to walk away is also a really important skill to have as well.
I think these are excellent points, especially the point where you talked about having a core set of skills, because you can easily get overwhelmed by the number of different things you need to know.
Yeah.
As a web developer, you know, you need... So many things. HTML and CSS keep changing. I mean, HTML, CSS are not constants. JavaScript keeps changing. The years 2015, 2016, and so on. They will keep changing. And then we have JavaScript frameworks. They're all new kinds. Then we're the server-side technologies. They're programming languages. You could be working in JavaScript. You could be working in Ruby. You could be working in C#, Java. There's no end to this. So.
Yeah.
And of course, we haven't even talked about the backend, the database. And if you start trying to do everything all at once, you will definitely struggle. So what is your core strength? I think it's very important to recognize that. It's a good point. So the next question I want to ask you is about your first job as a software engineer. Because we need to know, because imagine that I am somebody who's done everything right. Now I have some skills. Now I'm like, I need to get a job. What do I do?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a great question. So in my case, there are two different type of jobs, right? So when you say first job, my first thing is my first contracting job, and then my first real job. So in my case, I do quite a bit of consulting. I started pretty much building websites for other people when I was in college. And I was able to do that in addition to some other duties where I was able to do it full time for about 6 or 7 years before I decided, hey, you know, maybe it's time for me to move into something else. You know, maybe it's time for me to kind of see what it's like working for another person. Good example of that is just, you know, doing your work and meeting people and letting them know what you do, you know. And I think that's a great, if I had to give that advice to someone just starting off, that's a great way for you to level up your skills. You know, it's one thing you sit down and you get an idea for something, and so you create it. And so you share it with some friends. And then, who knows, you know, someone else's mom or dad or someone else has a small business. They say, hey, can you do that for me? You say, sure. You know, you do a little research, you get an idea of maybe what you need to charge, you know, and you set up a relationship with them. And next thing you know, maybe they're paying you monthly to do that. And all while this is happening, you know, if you're taking that work and maybe you create your own site and you put it on your portfolio, you're going out meeting other people and say, hey, I just built this website for this, construction company. Oh, that's great. You know, I have a friend who needs that. And next thing you know, the ball gets rolling. And, you know, especially if you're out there networking and definitely getting, especially if you're meeting people who are outside of the tech industry, you'll see that people really need your skills, you know. And then that'll snowball and so on and so forth. So that's kind of what happened with me. And it snowballed so much so that I ended up contracting for Microsoft for MSN for a while, and then doing work with Nike. And I really started doing a lot of work within the sports industry. If you can believe it, there's not a whole lot of software engineers or just IT people with an IT background at all in the sports industry. And that's what I did for a number of years. As far as the job that I have now, I happened to meet our vice president of engineering while I was out in Chicago. And, you know, we met, told me about his company, and I kind of told him what I was looking to do. And he said, hey, have you thought about maybe, you know, coming back to Columbus? You know, I had family here. And I said, yeah, I definitely, you know, entertain it. And one thing led to another. And, you know, I've been here in Columbus for coming up on about a year and a half now.
Yeah, so there's several points that you made that are excellent points. One of them is that this is one of the few industries in the world that that the power is within you. You don't need a job. You can, if you're a web developer, or you want to be a web developer, you can make a website very cheap or even free and tell people what you can do. If you are an app developer, for example, you could certainly build an app for the iPhone or the Android or any of the other ecosystems. You can show people what you have with a very simple set of tools, usually just a computer and maybe some software, and you're not bound by your location. If you are in a place where there are no jobs, move where there are jobs. You have to be flexible in yes. order to create that opportunity for yourself. But it's a very good way to start. If you are starting out, you're thinking about starting a career, don't wait for somebody to give you a job. Start working, start outputting things. And when you do go out there and talk to people, they will have something to look at as proof of your work. I think those are excellent points.
Yeah, I couldn't agree, you know, more. You know, you have to... You have to create products. You have to create products. You have to create apps. You have to create websites. And, you know, if you put your work out there, people will definitely respond to it. You know, if they like it, you know, you'll know. And if they don't like it, you'll hear that too.
Yeah, that's true. And then we have these facilities, these services like GitHub, which is, for somebody who doesn't know, it's a website where you can host, you can put your projects using the Git revision control system. And it's available to everybody, and it's like a social networking site for developers.
Definitely.
And one of the things that people struggle with is there are two things. One is to be a software developer. So I can write code. Let's say I can make a website, but I'm not necessarily connected to the community. Maybe I don't know what to do. Maybe they're not aware that there are user groups that they can meet. There are conferences that they can go to. And also, a lot of people have certain baggage. Some people are members of the minorities. Some people have maybe other psychological developmental issues. Maybe you have some kind of handicap, or maybe you're in some way you are not integrated into society as a way in a way that other people are. So for those people, I mean, what would you suggest they do to become a valued member of the community? Because I think it's important to be plugged into the community.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, I couldn't agree anymore with what you said. I think that, you know, integrating yourself into the community is really big. I think that also for some people, it's an issue of confidence, right? Sometimes you feel as if, well, maybe I'm not ready to be a part of that group, right? Or maybe there won't be anyone who looks like me or shares my same belief system. You know, and that can happen whether you're a liberal or conservative, or, you know, what's your religious upbringing, or male or female, or so on and so forth. So I think one of the things that I think is really important is, you know, you have to step out on faith, whatever that is for you, you know, and say, it can be difficult. Right, because there are definitely a lot of people who are attracted to this who are naturally introverts, right? So the idea of going into a space, going to maybe a meetup, and I would recommend that everyone do this. You know, go to meetup.com or just Google it. You know, usually every major city has a JavaScript user group or a .NET user group or some sort of meetup, and attend. You know. Go in and attend. You know, it's okay. You don't have to say anything. You know, sit in the back, kind of observe, you know, and just take in what's happening around you. You know, learn as much as you can. Get an understanding of who may be the leaders in the room. You know, people that other people kind of look up to. Identify them. And I think when you're ready, you know, definitely seek them out. Say, hey, I'm here for the first time. And one of the things I think that I've seen is, you know, people are extremely supportive. There's always, especially when you go to user, there's always someone who's there who's new for the first time, you know, who's a student or self-taught, you know. Definitely seek those people out as well. You know, hey, I'm new. You're new. You know, tell me about yourself. One of the things that I think engineers love more, you know, love doing more than anything else is talking about the stuff that they build. Hey, you know,
what are you working on?
Yeah, what are you working on? Are you on GitHub? You know, let's exchange information. You know, maybe you're working on something and you like to collaborate with somebody, or, you know, hey, I got some code. Would you mind taking a look at it? You know, these are the sorts of things that we tend to rally around, and that's what I would recommend, you know, in order to become a valuable member of the community. It's really important to look at it as a kind of a two-way sort of street. You know, you can say, hey, I'm just here to get something for myself, or you can offer something to other people. You know, in my case, you know, I was one of those people who was kind of in the back of the room, quiet, in a lot of the meetups that I was going to. And then I realized, you know, hey, I wanted to get better. So I nervously stuck my hand up one day and I said, hey, is there anyone who has an interest in maybe getting together and doing some pair programming? And I was really astonished and surprised to find out that there were 8 people. You know, I think this was 8 to 9 people. The first time that I made that announcement, who kind of rallied around me afterward and said, hey, can I get your information? I would love to meet with you and to do some pair programming and work through some challenges, you know. So I think it's really important to, you know, if you think about the values that come with the open source community, you know, is to not just kind of take, you know, but to also to be a servant, you know, to others and to give. And to give back, I think that's really important. You know, even when you're nervous, even when you're an introvert, you know, if you can do that, then I think that you'll be well served when you go out and attend, you know, various meetings and user groups in your city.
And you'll find that most developers are introverts, actually. And that in being around introverts is completely normal. But there, you used two terms. I think I'd like to you'd expound on those for people who may not know. You said open source, and you also said pair programming. What are those things?
Well, I'm happy you asked. One of the things that I'm guilty of, probably like some other people, is that we get used to saying the terms, and we assume that
everybody knows.
Yeah, everybody knows. As far as open source software, which is pretty much software that can be freely exchanged and shared online. So maybe I'll create some useful application and I'll put it online and I'll maybe contact a few friends and say, hey, you know, feel free to use this. You know, I may say, you know, you might have to, you know, I want some sort of attribution that, you know, I was the original creator of it. But other than that, feel free to use it for, you know, whatever, maybe for profit use or, you know, feel free to modify it and change it. So with that, just kind of with that sort of whole sort of mindset of, you know, you in kind of creating that, you may have pulled from some other open source libraries, you know. So you may have pulled from someone else's work, and I could say, oh, well, I'm going to create some product on top of it, you know, or I can say, well, just like I received this amazing gift in someone else's work, I'm going to take my work and I'm going to allow it to be shared and changed by other people. So it's really sort of an amazing, it's just a kind of amazing like mindset and manifesto of sorts that a lot of groups embrace, and it's rooted in so many like lovely things too, when you think about it, from just the various faiths, you know, from around the world who kind of have that same sort of like you know, loving, you know, like love is very important to them. And I find open source to be kind of very loving in the fact that, you know, you take and you use, but you also kind of give back as well.
So it also creates a community around a piece of software.
Yeah. And then pair programming is just primarily just two people working together to solve, you know, a given problem.
As opposed to one person. So normally, in a normal software development environment, you will have one person working on one task and the other person working on another task.
Yes.
So how does pair programming differ from that?
So there's a couple of different patterns for it. But the foremost one is the idea of the driver and a navigator. The driver is usually the person with their hands on the keyboard. They are the ones to manipulate code and to navigate screens. The navigator is usually the person, you know, to their immediate left or right. And it's that person's job to do most of the talking. The driver should be more silent. The navigator is there to kind of obviously navigate, you know, say, all right, this is the next thing that we're going to do. Or how about we move in this direction? Or this is also the person who may recommend, you know, best practices. This is the person who's looking for errors and you know, doing spell checking and things of that matter. Sometimes, too, that navigator will have their own computer, and they'll use that computer to maybe for looking up things in documentation, you know, for searching various things with Google. You know, maybe they'll have a REPL up or a console in which they can enter in, you know, various computations and get sort of an output.
So a REPL, just to interrupt a little bit, a REPL in this case is a command line environment. It's a terminal window where you run a program and then you can type ad hoc commands and then you get ad hoc responses. So when you're trying something new, you don't want to put it in a big program And then you have to run this whole big thing in order to know what happens. You can just try it out quickly. So it's like you can use the analogy of a math calculator to see what the result will be before you put into your big program, right?
Exactly. That's how I would kind of define it. It's almost like a calculator. I can put in 1 + 1 and, you know, hit enter and 2 will come out. I can put in a given function and give it some sort of input, you know, maybe a name or something, and maybe the function capitalizes it. I can run it and see, okay, what's the output of this function? So really helpful tools that we use every day. So that's normally how pair programming works. You have your driver and you have your navigator, and you know, it helps. It's really, sometimes people say pair programming is a bit slower than one person working on a task. But one of the things that is very clear that pair programming, it helps prevent the silly mistakes that tend to happen when one person is working on a thing, right? It helps you have more ideas and more feedback when you run up against a problem that, you know, a single programmer may want to start banging their head against the wall on. You know, you get someone say, well, Dad, did you think about this? Or what about this? Or you forgot to, you know, you're working in PHP. You forgot to throw a semicolon there. That's why. that's why.
Things
it's
that
not
we
working.
All do. So I think if I want to summarize that, I'll say that pair programming allows software to be built with higher quality the first time, because you can eventually improve quality. Because what you'll do is, if one person is working on it and they think their solution is complete and well done, they will say it's done, and then there is a team of testers. They will test them, and then they will find 10 or 15 different problems with it, and they will write up these little tickets and then send it back to the developer. Maybe it comes back to him in a week or 2 weeks later, and then he has to go through it and try to remember, what was I doing? And he's in the middle of something else now, but now he has to go back into it, recreate that situation, and then find out why. And it's the moment is gone, but but you can avoid the whole cycle of this very slow feedback loop and then make a very quick and short feedback loop by just having two people quality testing each other.
Yeah, I think if I could also make a really small point, there's another pattern where you have one person who writes a test, the other person makes it pass. That's another pair programming, sort of
nice, very
you know,
nice.
Pattern as well. So, you know, to kind of, you know, just to add a little bit more to your point, that's something else that some programmers do as well.
Excellent. So we are actually running very long, but I think we can go for a few more minutes.
Okay.
There are a few questions that are very important for somebody who's starting out. I would like your opinion, because you're directly involved with mentoring developers. One of the reasons I wanted you in this interview was because you have personal experience. You come across so many new developers or aspiring developers, so you're a good person to answer these questions. I want to know, from the software development shop perspective, from the point of view of the employer, do you think we are creating, as an industry, nurturing and enabling environment for new developers to grow and to prosper? Or are we creating a situation where they are up against the wall and they're likely to fail?
Well, I think it depends upon the company, to be honest. I think, you know, obviously you have business needs, right? Which is, we need to get out some new features. We need to get out some new application really quickly. You know, and then there's this other mindset that says we feel that it is our duty to help our people excel and grow. And so you'll see that through great mentoring programs, or my personal favorite would be apprenticeship programs, in which you have a junior developer who's paired with a senior developer, or is handpicked by a senior developer, and they work together closely. You know, it could be over months or over years, and it gives a junior person an opportunity to an opportunity in which to learn best practices. And I also think, too, a part of mastery for senior developers is being able to communicate better. So having the ability to communicate you know, your thoughts and intentions to a junior developer take skill. You know, it takes skill to be an effective communicator and an effective teacher. So I think that's one thing. Also I would say, you know, secondly as well, there's nothing like a junior developer working with a senior developer. The junior developer is going to ask all those questions that someone more senior might think it's stupid for me to ask that, but it may be very important. Well, why do we do things this way? That's a, you'll say to the junior developer, that's a really good point. Why do we always pick this exact same pattern when building this sort of application? You know, or, you know, why do we do these things? And so I think that it also provides a number of benefits. Some people feel that, you know, that the team may move slower, but I think it the benefits completely outweigh the, you know, the disadvantages, the possible negatives when pairing a junior and a senior person. And I think that if a company is willing to do that, then I think what they'll end up with is they will end up with extremely strong developers who are learning and growing. And I think, too, one of the biggest issues that a lot of shops have, whether it's a development shop or some software company, is churn. And I think giving someone, you know, giving someone some added value outside of just pay, obviously, you know, and whatever perks that, you know, different companies have nowadays, you know, having your work mean something is very important for a lot of people, including myself, you know, and I think that's really important for companies to do. And if they do that, I'm sure that they'll be extremely successful in keeping really great developers around.
Excellent answer. I think I completely agree with you. So, somebody who wants to start a career as a software developer or software engineer, what would you consider as a rating for that type of career? So let me rephrase that. How would you rate software development as a career for someone who's curious but is intimidated?
Okay. You mean, is it a good choice as opposed to, let's say, being a banker?
Exactly.
Is that the question?
Yes.
Well, let me put it like this. I worked in sports for, and I still do. I shouldn't say I worked in sports because I still do work in sports somewhat. The way I look at it is like this, is that you have pretty much two types of people in the world, right? You have those that make things with their hands, right? Those who are able to create things. And you have those who have money, and that means either that they are just, you know, wealthy, or maybe they're really great salespeople, right? They're able to find, you know, income or finances, able to find some sort of, you know, resources along those, that sort of manner. I feel as almost everyone else moves paper around, and I do not say that in order to diminish the work that they do, but it's very easy to find someone else to do that work, right? You say, oh, well, we don't want something else, someone else to organize. So I feel like, and with today's sort of, you know, the way the workplace is, that it's in most people's interest, especially if you have, you know, entrepreneurial leanings, to be in a place in which you can create for yourself. Because it means that you are in a place to be creative and come up with new ideas, you know, and immediately get to work on building those things without having to get someone else involved necessarily, you know, in a lot of cases. You can, maybe it involves, you know, having a lot of, you know, special, maybe you are going to need a full development team, but more than likely you're in a place to be able to at least prototype it. So I would say if you have those sort of interests, right, and you like tinkering and you like building, and I think software development is really great. It's only going to grow. The pay is very good right now. There's a lot of opportunities. You know, I think the here in Columbus, Ohio, the unemployment rate for software engineers is about 1%. You know, so I think it's a great place to be. I'd much rather do that than I'd much rather be a developer than a lawyer.
Yeah. So the important thing that I discovered is that it is an intimidating field to get into. People are intimidated.
Yes.
And they think it's going to involve a lot of math, a lot of crazy things, which actually is not true. I don't really do day-to-day math. Right. Math is an important part of some things that I do, perhaps some CSS positioning or something. But in general, you don't need to be a mathematician. You don't need to be a math guru to do computer science or to make a career out of software development. And all you need is, as you said, passion and the attitude of not giving up. You have to enjoy the creative part of it. You have to enjoy constant learning. Because if you're bored from learning, obviously, you don't want this type of career. But I think this can be pretty rewarding because you can start your own company. You can do your own thing. You can get a job. You can get a cushy job if you want it. And this is not perfect, but it is one of the best careers out there, in my opinion.
I would concur. I definitely agree.
Okay, so now to wrap up, let me ask you a couple of quick questions.
Okay.
So hopefully some quick answers for that. Do you listen to podcasts?
I do from time to time. Ruby Rogues and the Ruby Tapas are actually I work with Dave Brady, which is really great, who's over at Ruby Rogues. And I think Tapas is Abdi Grimm, who's also works with the Ruby Rogues team as well. So those are probably my two top podcasts that I listen to from time to time.
Do you watch screencasts or video podcasts?
I do on occasion. When I do, it's usually the sysadmin cast. So I found myself having a large interest in kind of what sort of things our infrastructure team gets into. So I just like learning more about the foundation of the, of kind of what I'm working on, right? I'm at the application layer, but I like to learn a little bit more about what our sysadmins and operations engineers are doing. So sysadmin cast is probably something. I also found a new screencast site called livecoding.tv, which is kind of cool. It's kind of like Twitch. Twitch is the screencasting for games, for gaming. But this one is just for programmers. So that's kind of cool. And you have programmers from all over the world banging their heads against the wall while they're attempting to get their dependencies in order.
Yeah, it's good to see other people you're not the only one struggling with this stuff.
Exactly. That is so helpful at times, if you can believe it.
So, okay. So we know that you listen to podcasts, you watch some screencasts. Do you also read blogs, and do you think they're important?
I think blogs, it's funny. Maybe it's just the way content has changed as of late. I'm much more into video as of late. So you'll see me, watching things on YouTube or, as I mentioned, like Ruby Rogues or Ruby Tapas. But as far as blogs, because there's so much content out there, I'm normally going to Hacker News for that sort of stuff. And then for more in-depth, like technical blogs, I'm usually looking at one of the weeklies. So I don't know if anyone's familiar with that at all, but there's Ruby Weekly, there's Node.js Weekly, HTML5 Weekly. And it's just pretty much a weekly newsletter that goes out. And it just has kind of like a cliff notes of all the top blogs with tutorials and instructional videos and just different little bite-sized pieces of content, which are really amazing. So it helps me keep in tune with like what's coming out, what's that new crazy framework that everyone's kind of talking about. So it's usually Hacker News or Ruby Weekly or HTML5 Weekly, one of those weekly email newsletters. I actually get them all.
I think you're mentioning these aggregators because you don't have enough time to look through all of the different blogs that are out there that are relevant to you. But you look at this aggregator, which is going to go through and give you a summary and then get the gist. And if you're interested, you can dig deeper and go into that particular post.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend the weekly. So those are provided by Cooper Press, Peter Cooper. So if you Google him, you can find out. But he has so many different newsletters. It's like there's like a Go newsletter, Bitcoin Weekly, Postgres Weekly, Cloud Development. You know, there's a ton of them, but they're really, really, really helpful. And he's been extremely helpful to a number of programmers in helping us aggregate this content, because there's so many things going on in a given day. And if I had to, you know, hit, you know, in my case, I would have to hit like 100 websites, you know, and then try to pour over which ones, you know, which pieces of content are the most important. And I'd much rather have Peter Cooper and his team do that for me.
Absolutely. And so it helps Peter because he has this business where he can do the aggregation. And it helps us because then we don't have to do that work. So I think it's a win-win. Now, I'll ask you two questions. I need 30-second answers for both.
Okay.
What's the best advice you can give to software shops looking to hire new developers?
Be patient, number one. And number two, create an apprenticeship program and take it very seriously.
Excellent advice. I think that we need to sort of nurture these new developers and help them along because there's some really good talent in there. Now, the last question, what's the best advice you can give to a new and aspiring developer? 30 seconds.
Oh. It's funny. Someone asked me just the other day, and I'll tell you what I told her. Create an application a day, if you can. Push it to Heroku. Code every single day until you have a job.
Code every single day. This is very ambitious, but I think that this is excellent advice. Because if you do that, there is no way you will not succeed because people will notice because that's a little bit insane. But at least if not every day, then, you know, regularly every week, you need to also promote yourself. So if I push out a new application on Heroku every day, but nobody knows about it, maybe I should promote myself. Maybe I should have a blog in order to showcase what I've done, or maybe I should present it to a local user group. I do need to be out there, but I need substance. So for that, I think this is excellent advice. Build it something every day and put it out there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
It was great talking to you, Jay, and I've known you for a while, and I think you're a good friend. What are you working on? Is there anything that you'd like to plug? Is there anything you want people to know about you before we go?
Yeah, definitely. I would recommend. If you're here in Columbus, it's a group called Pair Columbus. Me and a number of other programmers help lead. And it's just pretty much a resource for people who are new or experienced programmers who want to get out and meet new people and tackle challenges. We get together once a month. If you navigate to paircolumbus.org in your browser, you can find out more about us. It's a great place for those who are introverts and we'll seek you out. I'll come and look for you and introduce you to some other people if I notice that you're new. Check that out. And even if you're not in the city, definitely visit the website. There are a number of different challenges that you can pull down from GitHub and work on yourself. And if you're familiar with Git, you know how to create a pull request. We'll review those with you help you, add to your skill set.
Excellent. I can vouch for that program. It's excellent. All that information, we'll put it in the show notes. So it's been a pleasure talking to you, Jay, and
hopefully
you'll be able to come back here again.
Okay. Thank you very much, Arsalan. This is awesome. Keep doing what you're doing.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.